Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. To learn more about Author Magazine, go to authormagazine.org. And we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. The PNWA has a writers' conference every year, every summer. It's going to be at the end of July in SeaTac, Washington, at the Red Lion. Actually, I don't know where it is, but it's down in SeaTac. It's going to be a good one, and it's filling up faster than ever this year. I'll be teaching a one-day masterclass on the memoir there, plus various other things. But I know Robert DeGoney is going to be teaching a craft class as well, plus the Bob Mayer is going to be teaching a class on writing and publishing, and Donald Moss will be teaching The Fire Within workshop on Sunday. It's going to be a great conference. Lots of agents, lots of editors. Can't recommend it enough. If you want to learn about that conference, go to pnwa.org and sign up now. So I have to begin with an apology. I'm going to have to fire my research assistant. Today's guest is the wonderful Laura Saville, who I describe as a debut author. Well, she's not. Not at all. She's actually the author of a best-selling author of the novel Henry and Rachel, as well as the memoir Unraveling Anne. We get things wrong. But, you know, I will tell you, maybe it's because, like Alice Hoffman said, every time she said she starts a novel, she feels like she doesn't know how to do this. I wonder if that's true for Laurel. Laurel, how are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. I don't know. Do you feel like a debut novelist, even though you're not a debut novelist, when it comes out for the first time? Does it feel new every time to you?
It actually doesn't, because I think partially because I've been a professional writer for of all kinds of things, books, articles, essays, short stories, corporate communications, all of this for, you know, full time for 12, 13 years.
Yeah.
So for me, I sort of feel like I'm a farmer. I go to my desk every day and I write what needs to be done, you know.
Yeah.
It kind of depends upon, some stuff is more deadline driven than others. And as you know, when you write a book, you know, you write and write and write and write and write in isolation, and you're going to work on it like crazy. And then your editors get involved, which is so wonderful, and sometimes that sends things off in a different direction or gives you a whole new set of tasks to do, which I always find really thrilling. And then you send it to your publisher, and it kind of disappears for a while they do set up the book cover and the marketing and all the plans and get everything going. And by the time it comes out, it's a little bit like, what book was that?
<You
know? laughs> And then you start reading the reviews, and it's kind of like, oh, right, I forgot about that section. So so it's really exciting. I mean, not to say that it's not incredibly exciting. It's always thrilling, and those first few weeks and months are so much fun to go and check your reviews and hear from people and get those random emails from on Facebook and through email and stuff from people you've never heard of who just say,
right,
I just want to tell you about that. I read your book. This is how I felt about it. So that it's really exciting. There's no question about it.
Yeah. And so there is that strange thing. And I like to talk to my students about it because I think it's useful, which is that, and you just referenced it in your description of that distance between when you finish the book and to when it comes out and people actually experience, which is that when I think of anything I've written, my main relationship to it's over, because the main relationship is the act of writing it. That's where what needs to grow grows and what I discover and so on. And I've really moved on by the time people read it. And so I have to kind of restart the relationship. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. You know, and some things have a shorter distance between writing and publishing and trying to get response from readers. Like as part of, I recently had an essay published in Good Housekeeping, and it was something that I'd actually had for a while, and the PR team for this book said, got any essays we could place for you? And so it came out, and you know, I reread it and edited it, and it came out and started getting responses all bam, 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 quite quickly.
Right.
And that's really fun. And but I would say that, you know, my prime, there's so many different ways of relating to your work. I mean, there's the what I think of as the solitary part of it, which is when you're sitting in your office by yourself and writing and struggling and writing and struggling, and that's one whole relationship. And then there's the relationship that happens when you start to work with your editors, you know, and they may say things like, for this particular book, when I first sent it to them, they said, love it, it's amazing, it's fantastic, it's the best thing you've ever had. Could you throw out the last third? which is not that uncommon. And could you, this other character, can you bring her up? And, you know, and then you have a whole different relationship. And then you get into the marketing side of where you're trying to remember to do all your social media and your marketing and things like that. And then there's the relationship with the readers. So there's all these really different heads you bring to your work. You're fortunate enough to be published.
And, you know, you do a lot of, you talked about doing some work for sort of corporate work where you're more on assignment in a way, I assume. And can you talk about the difference between the way you think, the way you work creatively for a job like that, as opposed to a novel where you really get a blank page?
Well, I've done some books that were work for hire, which are kind of assignments, and that's kind of a huge project where you have a very particular project that you're working on. And so that's work for hire too, but it's also a book. And one of the things that I like very much about corporate communications work is the shorter timeline, but also you are working collaboratively. So you're working part of a team to develop the strategy. You're talking to the client who is whoever is the marketing director, whether it's a Fortune 100 company or a small nonprofit or whoever it is. And I've been fortunate to work across that whole spectrum. And you're working with graphic designers, and you know, you're working with brand managers, and you're all trying to pull all these different ways of communicating together to get the same story across. And that's really exciting and really fun, and a very different approach to the writing than the full-on imaginative work of writing a book. You know, you're writing much more to a task, which is a different intellectual challenge, a different creative challenge. And so I'm very pleased to have all of them. It's all good writing, but you're bringing different parts of your intellect and imaginative and creative capabilities to bear. Of course, the other thing that's nice about corporate communications is it pays well. So there's
that. Yeah, sure. Well, and so you like working with other people, because there are a lot of writers I know who really, I mean, they work with their editor and they're fine with that relationship. But part of the appeal of writing is the solitary nature of it. In fact, I just interviewed for the upcoming issue Drew Chapman, who's written his second suspense novel, but he has a very successful television writing career in television and screenwriting. And that's a very collaborative medium. And he specifically likes the books because he gets to just say, look, this is what I want it to be. But you enjoy the collaboration.
I like them both. I don't think I could do, you know, it would be hard to do only one or the other. I mean, I like both of them. I definitely am a solitary person. I definitely am a lone wolf. And, you know, some of my larger clients have said, why don't you come work for us on staff? And I would say, I couldn't do it. I couldn't. It's very hard to work in an office. It's very hard to write in an office environment. So I'm fortunate that I've been able to craft this career that lets me be on both fronts very solitary, but be able to tap into the collaborative stuff from time to time, which, you know, really helps your creativity. It really, if all you have to do is sit and dream and write whatever you want to write, you know, that's wonderful. But to have somebody bring you to task or make a request or say, no, it needs to do more of this or more of that is really the fun intellectual work as far as I'm concerned.
So this is novel number two. There was a memoir prior to that. And I think it's great the way you've found a way to create a career from writing. It's not always so easy for folks to do, and you've really embraced it and thought about it, but was novel writing part always sort of the goal, or was it just, I want to write and it really doesn't matter?
I think I wanted to do all of the above. You know, I definitely didn't want to just be sort of a a moody, brooding, stuck in my garret, you know, scribbling away on my memoirs or my novel. You know, as I say, I think being in the world, to some degree, as much as you can tolerate it anyway, is great for growth. You know, it's the way you grow, the way you evolve, and the way you learn. So for me, it's always been both. I've always professionally been involved in public relations, advertising, design, marketing, brand strategy, and things like that. In my mid-30s, I said, well, you know, I really want to see about this other side. And I had some short stories published and things like that. So I did make the commitment to go back to grad school, and that was a commitment to see. Felt like I'd taken a lot of workshops and been to a lot of conferences, and I wanted to basically see if I was any good. You know, and I felt like I'd taken myself as far as I could on my own and as far as I could with those other one-off, short-term, few days here, a week there, weekend here kind of a thing. So I made that commitment, and that was really great for me. You know, it really I learned tons and learned about where my strengths really were and what I was capable of and where I could push harder, and also was part of this wonderful intellectual community of people who were writers. And fortunately, I got into one of the best law residency programs, so I could do it and keep my day job. So that was really wonderful, and that really set me on the path of, you know, creating a novel from, well, it was a memoir, mostly from start to finish, and having a piece of work that then I could go through the torturous process of trying to get published, which was hell.
It was hell. Now, why was it hell? It isn't for everybody. I'm not saying that that your experience is unusual, but why was it hell for Laurel?
It's just so much close but no cigar for so long. So I got out of grad school, and I had one of my professors got me hooked up with his agent, who was a very extremely respected, well-known, you know, agent of a boutique firm, and it was wonderful and helped me shift to work. We kept getting, it's the classic story, we kept getting, oh my God, this work is so beautiful, this memoir is so beautiful, the writing is as good as it gets, it's fantastic, but I don't know what to do with it, so.
Right.
And it's kind of frustrating because you say, well, why, tell me, you know, it'd be better if you told me something to do, you know, something, there's nothing to do. And one editor held on to it for a year, you know, and you just, your work is completely tied up in this process of traditional publishing, which is such a nightmare of a process, and on so many fronts, and you could do 6 or 12 or 15 shows on that. But then once I said to her, are you done? And she said, yeah, after a few years, she said, I've done everything I can. Then I self-published, which was back in its infancy back then. It was, you know, now it's quite common, but it was still pretty new back then, and managed to sell 600 copies on my own, which is a lot, given that most self-published books only sell less than 100, and most traditionally published books sell less than 1,000. But in any case, got it in the hands of an editor at a brand new imprint at Amazon Publishing, and I was one of their first handfuls of books that they ever published. And of course, now, you know, I think it was like their 10th book, and of course now they have at least 10 imprints and you know, publish thousands of books a year. And that was just a few years ago that all you know, transpired. So I was very fortunate because the Amazon imprints take incredibly good care of their authors, and really, as I have been told many times, they view us as customers and they treat us like customers. So it's a real pleasure to be published by them and get their marketing support and their editorial support and their just general support. You know, they're just really nice to you.
Yeah, they. I have a couple friends who are published by them now who have been with New York publishers and then moved over to Amazon, and they've loved the experience because Amazon does understand. I mean, they understand a lot. I mean, obviously they have editors and they know how to produce a book, but they have understood the marketing arm, which I think has puzzled a great many publishers, honestly.
Well, I think it's really a very clear business model in that publishers do not have distribution and they do not have marketing. They just don't have it. They have to rely on bookstores for distribution. They have to rely on magazines and newspapers and all that for advertising. Amazon has the editors, the creation, the ability to create the create the raw material, and then they have the distribution and the platform and the marketing platform. It's all in one place, so they can just do stuff that literally you could not buy. I mean, my memoir was featured on the homepage, on Amazon's homepage of the case history, you know, so when you, I mean, you literally can't buy that real estate.
Right.
Yeah, you know, if you were a traditional publisher. So there's just a lot that they can do.
So you have a background in public relations and marketing, which for a lot of writers, the marketing end of the writing world is not their favorite part, and they are grateful to have any help from their publicist that they get. But do you ever bring that sort of business savvy that you have to your life as an author?
Well, sure. I mean, I think the biggest thing I do is I trust the professionals. So I've been fortunate to have a full PR team on this book. I've had several different PR teams, but the one I have on this book is a PR team, and they have a social media specialist, and they have a PR specialist, and then there's the person at Amazon Publishing who's a PR person, and I do what they tell me. I get as much information from them as I can, and I try to support everything they do, and I take their guidance, and I know enough about marketing and PR to know that I should listen to them and do as they request. And you know, the other reason I do that is because the more I cooperate with them, the more excited they're going to be about making things happen for me. I do have certain understanding about how you talk about. I mean, I can step away from the work and see it as a product that has to be marketed and do things for it without getting, you know, personally and emotionally involved. I mean, I'm very personally and emotionally involved in the writing, but then once it's out there and it's done and it's complete, then it's a product that we need to market in the best way we can. So I can definitely see that. You know, I do think that's where writers sometimes get tripped up, if they get very, you know, they get hurt or they're, you know, and I mean, you know, crappy reviews suck, but, it's also just somebody's opinion, you know.
It is someone's opinion, and it is one single person's opinion, you know, and I just read, I know the guy who's the main film reviewer for the New York Times. I grew up with him, and he went on to become this, you know, the film reviewer for the New York Times. So I always have a curious interest in the things he writes and talks about, because I still picture him as a 14-year-old kid I was hanging around Providence with. And he has a book out now, and I realized it was about criticism and the value of criticism. And I was reading the back of it, and I thought, God, I thought, God, I so disagree with this in so many ways. And it reminded me, like, he's a good guy. He's a smart guy. I've always thought he was very astute. And I do not agree with certain opinions he has about art and value of it and so on. And it's his opinion. Right. That's his one. Right. And it's going to come to everything he reviews. And it's true of everybody. I feel like reviews. Go ahead.
I look at it this way. If the people, and this is maybe it's just a self-fulfilling prophecy, but it seems to me that people love and hate the exact same thing about most pieces of artwork. So people say about this book, because there's four large sections featuring four different pairs of couples. People just say, oh, it was so interesting reading this nonlinear structure and this unique way of writing the book. It's like nothing I've ever read, and I found it so fascinating. Where they say, I couldn't stand that it was a nonlinear structure. Why didn't you just make it clear and straightforward? So I figure, as long as that's happening, it's okay with me. You know, they're reacting to the same thing. You know, when somebody says, like, there was a review recently, somebody said something like, it's a really great book, but I really wish the characters had found God and followed their faith. You know, and you just have to sort of say, you know, it's not the book. I mean, that's a nice sentiment, but that's not the book. Or they'll say, you know, I really wish it had a, someone, I had to look this up. Someone said, I like books that had HEA, and I didn't know what HEA was. HEA, which is happily ever after. So
All right.
You know, I'm not a happily ever after necessarily writer, so.
All right.
Although this book does to some degree end with a happily ever after. So it's just, you know, there's these really personal things that you just have to shrug about. But then, you know, when someone's honestly engaging with the work, they just can have very, you know, different reactions to the exact same quality of it.
Absolutely. You know, the way I phrase it is every time writing is about making choices. I mean, every single word is a choice you made. You may not think of it because they come so quickly, but technically, and sometimes you sit there and really think about the choices, right? But every time you make a choice, especially a narrative choice, there is a sense of like you could go left or right and you choose left. I'm going to go nonlinear. Right. I'm going to tell it from this person's point of view instead of that. So every time you make a choice, if you go left, you don't go right. And there's going to be someone who's going to be thinking, well, why did they go right? I wish they went right. Right's so much better. I prefer right. And you can't go both ways. And so every time you do something, you don't do something else. And there's always going to be someone who wished you did something else. Always.
My favorite, you know? My favorite line is the color of consensus is mud. It's not my line, but I think it's a wonderful statement. You know,
that is so awesome.
And you know, if I scan through my recent reviews of this book, because it's actually been out of the Kindle First since February 1, it's hysterical. Because you know, all the 5-star reviews are like this. It took so many twists and turns. It was completely unpredictable. I had no idea where it was going. I couldn't put it down. It was so interesting and so surprising. And then the reviews are very good, so I'm not complaining. But then there's the little ones there. It was so predictable. I knew exactly where it was going. I couldn't finish it. So you just have to write the very best book you can, and listen to the people who you respect and who you feel deeply engaged in the work. You know, I mean, certainly if you write your review and it's full of typos and misspellings, you can't get too upset about that.
Right. Well, you know what? Do you know who André Debussy is? I talk about him. He's a good teacher.
Sure.
He's a novelist. So I've interviewed him 4 or 5 times, I don't know, but I love the guy, and I've become kind of a friend of his.
Sand and Fog.
That's correct, and a great memoir, a townie, about writing is just wonderful. And but he's interesting. Last time I talked to him, he said, "You know what?" He said, "I don't read reviews anymore. I just don't do it." And somebody, I forget who. I think it's in the interview. Some Pulitzer Prize winner, because that's all his friends, you know, had said to him, I don't read reviews. And he said, you don't have to read reviews. And she said, no, you don't have to do it. He said, I don't. So he doesn't do it anymore. He doesn't even read them, period, anymore, because he feels they just screw with his mind too much.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
I totally understand that sentiment, but I want to know how people react. I'm not writing for my own pleasure. I mean, I'm writing for my own pleasure, but I'm not writing. I want to know how readers feel about my work. You know, to me, that closes the circle. That completes that completes the creative process. That finishes the loop. I want to know what's working. There used to be this great feature on a book page on Amazon's website where you could scroll down and it would show you what sections, people were highlighting the most in their Kindle. And you can still see it if you get the book on Kindle. You can see if you read a book on a Kindle, it'll show you what's being highlighted.
Right.
But as an author, I just love looking at that and saying, like, oh, so that sentence that I labored over for however many hours or days or weeks or months, they like that one. That one really worked for them. That one really resonated.
Yeah.
And that sentiment that I was trying to embed in that sentence must have meant something to them. You know, so I don't I have an ability to read the crappy reviews and roll my eyes and move away.
Which
is a lot easier to do now in book 3 and, you know, after all this time.
Yeah.
And it's actually, as we discussed, it's not even book 3 because I've written 5 or 6 books on design topics as well. So, I mean, I can read the good reviews and pick out what is interesting to me. But I definitely want to close that circle. I want to know how readers feel about my work. I want to know if it's working. I want to know if it's resonating with them, if it's making any kind of an impact.
Well, I totally understand that also. And you know what's the interesting thing about when people don't like a book you've written? One thing I've learned about myself creatively is that sometimes the way I understand my own creative impulses is by recognizing the things I don't like. So if I see something that isn't working for me, it often immediately on the other side of that is the thing that I would like it to be. And if I'm proactive, I take what I don't like about someone else and say, well, what do I want it to be? And then I go create from there. Does that make sense to you? And
Absolutely.
So a lot of times what you're getting from people who are criticizing your work, I think, and I see it on YouTube a lot in the comment pages, is people who are not creating what they want, simply complaining about the things they see that they don't like instead of going and making the things that they do like. Because they're taking just the first step.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, complaining is easy. Complaining is just the easiest thing in the world to do. I think also because I've worked professionally, you know, as a writer, and I use that word in air quotes, and worked, you know, property. I mean, very used to having, you know, clients say, this isn't it. I can't, you know, this is, the tone isn't quite right, or the voice isn't quite right, or we need to add this piece of information.
Right.
I think I get what you're saying, but I'm not really getting it. So for me, it's all really interesting information. It's just information. I mean, you don't have to take it personally. It's just, you know.
Right.
And
even with
clients, I can say, you know, as many times I've been like, well, you may not be getting it, but I think your customers who are actually writing to will be getting it. You know, so there's a lot, you know, that kind of just back and forth I'm very accustomed to. And I just see it as information. And it's up to me why I'm doing that information.
That's great. That's all it is, too. Even rejection letters are just information. Yeah.
Well, sometimes they're not any information at all, unfortunately. But it would be nice.
Well, but they at least tell you that they don't want it.
If you get a rejection letter with information, that's a good thing. That's, you know, you should be
it is.
But
that's all, really all it is. It's the taking it personally that undoes us so much.
And so it's just, you know, you kind of have to just, you know, stiffen your spine a little bit and shrug it off and just say, well, you know, What's the overall trend, and I'm not trying to write to make every single person in the world happy. I'm not trying to write a book that's going to make people who like, you know, HEA happily ever after. For people who, that's a priority, it's just not my thing. So that's okay. I don't want to be all things to all people.
You don't?
No, funny that, huh?
Oh, well. All right. I guess you'll just have to please some of the people some of the time. Well,
right.
Laurel, this has been wonderful, but we have time for one more question, if you're game.
Sure.
What I'd like you to do is finish this sentence for me. If writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what? What has it taught you, Laurel?
Clarity.
Clarity.
Clarity. Yes.
Clarity. All right. Because as you write, you have to say to yourself, what do I really mean? What am I trying to, how can I be, is that how it's taught you it? Or how have you learned that from writing?
Really, it's very much about what am I trying to say here, and what is the best way to say it, and how can I say it in a way that the person reading it is going to get it. It's not about, you know, it's not about me. It's about how I'm trying to convey a feeling, and again, this is the same whether it's a headline for corporate communications or a moment in a novel or a scene where a woman is, you know, an opening scene in a novel like this, the one I, like North of Here with the one that just came out, with the very opening scene. I remember sitting with that character as she was looking out the window at this other character and just saying, what is really going on here? What is going on in her head? What is she seeing? What is she feeling? How do I convey that feeling? How has that feeling been loaded by all the experiences of her life up to this date, up to this moment, and how do I convey that concisely in as few words and in descriptive but not distracting language and, you know, and compressed language and all that kind of stuff. And it forces, forces you to be really, really clear. You know, I just did it for another blog, a page 69 test, and they said go to page 69 of your book and read it and tell us what you think of it. And there was a metaphor about a guy finding that's on an old farmhouse, and something I'd written about the way the vine was wrapped around the mailbox, you know, waving like looking at a window. And it's like, that's metaphor that's symbolic, but it's clear and it conveys a lot of feeling and emotion. And there's a lot of different kind of metaphors I could have used, but I wanted that little bit of a seductive edge to it. And, you know, so all those decisions that go into what seems like a simple sentence, you know, it's like when you watch an incredible gymnast do their balance beam routine and it looks so effortless, but God, the hours and pain and, you know, and bruises.
Yeah.
In our cases, they're usually just mental bruises. But, it's really taught me how to be clear about what I think and what I feel and how to communicate that.
Excellent. Well, what a great lesson. What a great lesson. Well, Laurel, North of Here, it's out there. It's out there. It's out there. Go on Amazon. Get it. Write her a great review or not. She doesn't care.
Thank you.
All just information. And, well, I look forward to your next one, Laurel. This is a good one. It was very engaging. By the way, I didn't get to say so, but it was very engaging right away. So well done. And good luck on the next one.
Well, thanks for having me, Bill. I really appreciate it. I'm very easy to find. If anybody has any questions, feel free to contact me via email or Facebook or whatever. And I love hearing from people. And good luck with the rest of your shows and your own writing.
Thank you very much, Laurel. Take it easy.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Clarity, people. Clarity. You know what's the beautiful thing about clarity? It feels good. It really does. It always feels good. It's reason enough to seek it. All right. Next week, I will be talking to inspirational speaker and teacher Lee Miltier. Until then, go get clear with yourself and write what you love.